Good morning. This is Bishop Phoebe Rofe of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. We are broadcasting live from Crosstown Concourse in Memphis on 91.7 FM WYXR. And each Thursday, we have the opportunity to speak with a guest to learn about their work and ministry and the role of faith in their life. And so each week, we start the show with a segment entitled The Saint of the Day. And so today is December the 7th, and it's actually the feast day of Bishop Ambrose of Milan, a 4th century bishop from Italy. Ambrose was the son of a Roman governor, and he was raised in a Christian family. However, he never was baptized. And he got involved in the church in a very interesting and unusual way. There was a battle going on between Arians and Orthodox Christians at the time that a new bishop of Milan was being selected. And Ambrose got involved in this dispute as a mediator. And it was so heated that the crowd was almost about to actually get into a fist fight. And Ambrose really was able to calm people down, to sort of bring the temperature level down. And the crowd gathered to elect a new bishop. They were so impressed by Ambrose's ability to be calm in the face of a crisis that they decided they wanted him to be a bishop. Now, that was sort of crazy because, again, he wasn't even baptized, and he didn't have any interest himself in being a bishop, and yet, because the people insisted, he finally agreed. He was hastily baptized and ordained as a bishop on December the 7th in the year 373. Now, as someone who is a bishop myself, I can just imagine that that would have been an overwhelming experience to come to an election as an observer and a mediator and to end up walking out as the new bishop. But I suppose the people saw something in Ambrose, the signs of a true leader, because he rapidly won renown as a defender of orthodoxy and a true statesman of the church. He was also a very skilled musician and person who wrote hymns. He did such great teaching in subjects such as the doctrine of baptism, the understanding of the Trinity, and the Holy Eucharist or the Lord's Supper. And in fact, his preaching was so pervasive and persuasive that it was an important factor in the conversion of St. Augustine of Hippo, another great figure in the history of the church. He was not afraid to speak truth to power, including having one emperor do public penance after this emperor was involved in the slaughter of several thousand citizens, and preached many passionate sermons in support of the poor and the needy. So we remember him as someone who perhaps entered the ordained ministry path in a way that he never expected, but he was so open to how God might be speaking to him and calling him, and was so receptive to the community, seeing something in him that perhaps he didn't see in himself. And so as an example of community discernment, that we continue to remember him to this day. And so I will conclude with the prayer that is used for the feast of Saint Ambrose. O God, you gave your servant Ambrose grace eloquently to proclaim your righteousness in the great congregation and fearlessly to bear reproach for the honor of your name. Mercifully grant to all bishops and pastors such excellence in preaching and faithfulness in ministering your word, that your people may be partakers with them of the glory that shall be revealed through Jesus Christ our Lord, who lives and reigns with you in the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever. That was a beautiful instrumental version of Nearer My God to Thee And I imagine that Bishop Ambrose probably, hopefully, felt that God was near as he conducted his ministry in the 4th century, and that people of faith today continue to believe that God is close and near to us. So this morning, we are fortunate to be joined in the studio by Jared Barnett, who's with us from Slingshot, a really fascinating organization in Memphis that I have just learned about. And basically, it is a poverty-fighting center that is hoping to change the ways in which we are addressing poverty in Memphis through three primary functions. And I know that it's not only an issue in Memphis, but in other places as well. Before coming to Slingshot, Jared worked at McKinsey and Company, and his prior career has taken him to lots of interesting places, including South Africa and Ghana and Kenya. He has a Bachelor of Science in Accounting from Brigham Young University and an MBA with honors from the University of Chicago Business School. So, Jared, good morning and welcome to Faithfully Memphis.
Good morning, Bishop Phoebe. Thank you so much for having me on. Such an honor.
Wonderful. So we normally start the show by asking our guests if they would be willing to share a little bit about the role of faith in their lives. And I believe that you are a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, and that's actually a faith tradition that I don't know a whole lot about. So I would love to learn a little bit about sort of the role of faith in your formation as a young person.
Yeah. So I think my faith has kind of underpinned everything I've done, I guess. And sometimes I recognize it, and a lot of times I don't. It's just there. You know, I was raised a member of my faith, so it's what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. I have ancestors that go back generations upon generations kind of in my faith, and so there's this tradition there of my family kind of being Christian and really kind of making some hard changes to follow what they felt God called them to do. And so, you know, when I think of how faith has driven me, it's forced me to think about not just what can I figure out, and I love to solve problems, you know, I love to think logically and analytically about things, but I recognize that there's limits to what I can figure out on my own, and really learning to try and just trust God, and that sometimes that, you know, is part of how I think about making plans, and sometimes he has his own plans for us. And
like Ambrose, right?
Yes. I'm thinking of that. That's a shocker. I wake up in the morning, and next thing you know,
you're a bishop.
You're a bishop. And so, you know, it's been, for me, a path of how do I incorporate God's will in my life, and how do I seek that out? And that's something that's been really consistent, and I'm grateful for my parents and kind of helping me understand the importance of that, and that, you know, trusting that even if it's not what I thought was my plan or what I thought was the right thing, learning how to communicate with them, learning how to pray and receive inspiration to help guide my life and the choices I make. From what schools do I go to who do I marry, to, you know, what do I consider for careers and where I live and don't live. All of that has been driven by inspiration and seeking, you know, God's will for how I should live my life. So that's a little bit about kind of my own underpinning. And I think, you know, my faith is a big part of that because it's a lot of, you know, the anchor of all of it is having a relationship with God, right? And being able to think of him as someone who, you know, cares, is aware of me, and wants the best for me, and so therefore trusting that that's what his guidance will do, but also a way of living. So, you know, in my faith, there's a lot of guidelines around trying to, I would say, live Christ-like is what these guidelines are. But that goes from the things that I eat and drink. So I don't drink alcohol. I don't have coffee or tea. You know, I avoid certain substances. And then it involves, you know, being active in my faith. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that is there is, you know, faith without works is dead. is something that's a very big part of how I was raised, that if I believe in something, it should influence how I act, it should influence how I behave. And so I think that taking that to heart just throughout the different things I've experienced in life and the things I've tried to pursue.
Mm-hmm. And before we went live on the air, we were having a brief conversation, and you mentioned about how you don't really watch a lot of news or even listen to a lot of podcasts. Is that also sort of something connected with your faith, or is that just because you're a busy spouse and parent and working and all of these other hats that you wear?
It definitely not a lot of my faith, a lot of things in my faith that deal with audio and radio and TV and things. I think for me, it's more of just with news, I find it depressing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I try and always think about both sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's always more than what we see in the news. And I think we simplify and stereotype and other things where, you know, when we talk about someone who's committed a crime, well, they're someone's son, right? They're some, you know, mm-hmm. or someone's daughter. Mm-hmm. But that never gets its place, you know, right. In the news. We always focus on kind of the negative aspects or whatever's going to draw that. And then for me personally, I don't know if I'm smart enough to gather a lot of information through that. My wife's phenomenal at listening to things. Yeah. I am old school. I love to sit down with a book mm-hmm. that has, you know, paper.
and that it, tactile.
And just digest things through that. So I love that, or obviously today reading things on, you know, on the internet and mm-hmm. things like that is really how my mind just comprehends information better. And so that's the way that I'll do. So even when my church does things, you know, on TV or radio, I usually wait for the print version to come out, and then I'll read that in the morning as part of my kind of daily preparation. And that's really how I can comprehend things better.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your willingness to be on a medium that you probably would not actually listen to yourself.
I mean, that's the part of what I love about people is we're all different and we all yeah. process things differently. And I respect that, right? Like my yeah. way is not the best way by any means. It's just, yeah. that's what works for me. And I love that so many people learn in different ways and comprehend things in different ways. And so it's fun to be a part of those different opportunities and respect, you know, those differences that we all have.
Yeah, this radio show started in October of 2020 at the same time that WYXR started, right, in the midst of a pandemic. And one of the reasons that the diocese decided to take a risk and do this, because I don't have any background in radio or podcasting, was for precisely the reasons that you mentioned, that there is so much negativity. And we do so many things in 30-second sound bites. And so we wanted to be intentional about not only putting positive stories out, but having a conversation of 30 to 40 minutes so that we can go more in-depth and go beneath the superficial. Now, clearly, even in a 30 to 40-minute conversation, you can't cover everything, but it's a lot more than 30 seconds or 3 minutes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
So, Slingshot, when I moved to Memphis in the spring of 2019, I was told that Memphis was both one of the most philanthropically generous cities and one of the cities where poverty was so intractable. And a lot of money has been given, but people were still really searching for what is a solution or several solutions to this multi-generational poverty. And so Slingshot is a very, it seems like to me, has an innovative approach because you really want to base it on things that are evidence-based. So can you explain to the listeners a little bit about Slingshot and its purpose?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the concept, right, of being one of the most giving cities in the country, but while we still have one of the highest rates of people experiencing poverty is one of the premises around why Slingshot exists. And one of our beliefs behind that is that we haven't had a way in the past of measuring what's effective at fighting poverty, right? We have ways in society to measure the performance of businesses, measure our health, you know, to measure all sorts of other things. But when it comes to fighting poverty, we haven't developed that. And so because of that, we're left almost blind trying to figure out, well, should we do this? Should we do that? And mm-hmm. so therefore, as a community, all those efforts kind of go to some things that are really effective, some things that are really not effective. And when it averages out, not a lot changes. Mm-hmm. And so the premise of Slingshot is how can we create a way to measure the effectiveness of poverty-fighting organizations in an evidence-based way so that as a community we're empowered to take all of the good intentions, all of the caring that we have for our community and help ensure it leads to the greatest outcomes possible so that we can support the most effective efforts and if they're less effective, know how to make them more effective. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a great analogy I like to use is that, you know, I have a younger brother who's about 5 years younger than me, brilliant young man. He's a professor in economics and finance and, you know, love each other. But there's no way in the world I would ever let him perform surgery on me. no matter how much he cares about me, how much he wants to make sure I'm okay. There's just, that's something I would never let him do.
Right.
Because he's not trained in that. That's, he doesn't know mm-hmm. the best ways to do that. And when it comes to fighting poverty, a lot of times the people who go into that are people who have good intentions, but maybe haven't experienced poverty themselves or have experienced poverty, but haven't had training on mm-hmm. the best ways to do certain practices or run certain programs. And so our goal is how do we supplement all of that with that evidence base, with that knowledge of saying, okay, if God's given you a calling to do this, let's help you understand the most effective ways to do that based on what we can research, based on what we can analyze. Not that that by itself is sufficient, but mm-hmm. that coupled with everything else just further enhances our ability to help people.
Got it. Because I would imagine there's so many different nonprofits in Shelby County trying to help people in need. So I wonder if I had sort of started my own nonprofit to serve a particular constituency, if I were interested in learning how effective is it, could I invite you to do a study? Like, how would you even know about me and get involved?
Yeah, so we reach out to the community of nonprofits twice a year to okay. invite nonprofits to work with us. And so we, you know, we have people who reach out to us saying, you know, hey, I've heard about you. We'd love to go through that. We learn about nonprofits. We're like, ooh, we'd really like to study an organization mm-hmm. that's focused on this. But we're really trying to build that knowledge. And the way we build our knowledge is we go and study these organizations and we learn their practices. We mm-hmm. study the research that exists about those types of efforts. And we learn about, you know, what's really effective at achieving the outcomes that they want. And that's probably one of our, I guess, buzzwords is outcomes. It's this mm-hmm. idea that, you know, effort and intent and, you know, hard work is needed. But at the end of the day, I don't care if someone's completed a program. Mm. I care if someone's had something meaningfully change the trajectory of their lives. And we do that by measuring their health, their income. Is that improved in some way?
Okay.
And so that's what we care about is how do we get people to think about this from an outcomes perspective? Mm-hmm. And the answer is if an organization is interested in having a study like this done, reach out to us. Okay. You know, we'd love to work with any of those organizations and go through this process with them. And our view is to help empower them with just additional knowledge that helps them achieve the goals and aspirations they have.
So would they be expected to help offset or defray the expenses? Like, you all are a nonprofit. How do you all get funding? Like, who is interested in funding this type of research?
Yeah, that's a great question. We do not charge the nonprofits anything for the work we do. Mm-hmm. And one reason for that is we want it to be as inclusive as possible. Mm-hmm. And so we work with some pretty large organizations in the nonprofit space here, and we work with some very small grassroots organizations because we don't want the cost to be a factor around mm-hmm. who is able to kind of go through this work. And the way we're able to do that is the individuals and organizations that support our work, mm-hmm. They're able to cover all of our costs for our team and our work so that we don't have to charge these nonprofits anything that we do. And so that's a handful of kind of individual philanthropists here in the community, mm-hmm. A couple philanthropic foundations, and then in more recent years, we've actually had several of some of the larger corporations mm-hmm. here in the city support our work because they, in particular, that business mindset really resonates with what we do because yeah. it's, you know, a lot of analytics, a lot of kind of problem-solving mindset that in the business community they would use towards their work that in a way we're trying to use similar principles to mm-hmm. fight poverty. And so it's resonated with that community really well.
So you've been with Slingshot for a few years now. It looks like you started in 2019 and I'd started in the diocese in 2019. And I wonder, almost what, 5 years now, are there any sort of high-level conclusions or themes or things that you all have learned about what is more effective or less effective?
Absolutely. What frustrates me in some ways is that there's not like a couple silver bullets that cure poverty. The thing that I've kind of had to transition is in my business, you know, career when I was there, you could find two or three opportunities for a business that would drive a lot of value. And if you could get those two or three opportunities to come to fruition, mm-hmm. the business would be in a phenomenal shape. When it comes to helping people out of poverty, that's not the case. And the reason is because there's so many interconnected factors that can contribute to either people being in poverty or staying in poverty that you can't just focus on one or two things and say, okay, that's it. So education, you might get a great education, but if you lack transportation or you struggle to get the healthcare you need, well, the value of that that education can't be realized because these other factors are kind of undermining it. And so it's to me that one factor is you've got to have this more comprehensive mm-hmm. and holistic approach to helping people. Two, there's not a cookie cutter approach.
Right.
You know, we're talking about people and individuals. We have different challenges. We have different propensities. We have different skills and aptitudes. And so when we think about fighting poverty and we you know, a lot of times we like to think about scaling. Well, we should only scale in a way that we can do that and still honor the fact that we're helping individual people and families and they each have their own unique situations that we have to be able to be thoughtful about. Couple other things that have stood out to me is that in each kind of sector of poverty fighting, and we think of it very broadly in our work, so it could be something around early childhood education, prenatal care, it could be workforce development, anything that improves the health or income of someone experiencing poverty, we would consider that to be poverty fighting.
Okay.
And the reality is that there's not consistent practices that you would say go across all of them, but each of them on their own have effective practices.
Okay.
And so the idea here is if you think about, okay, early childhood education, what are some of the things that really are effective there? How do you then add that to something like literacy, right? And thinking about, okay, what do you go from early childhood into K through third grade? What are the things that help literacy most there? There's some really effective things of doing that. And it's more about a principle of how do you incorporate what's most effective into that work mm-hmm. is what we've seen really lead to powerful impact. And we've seen organizations be very effective in different ways of fighting poverty, mm-hmm. but it's because they're anchored on understanding what's the most effective practices, and they have a way of understanding what's happening to the people they serve. We think of that in terms of data, right? Collecting data information so that they can say, hey, we tried this, and we've seen this huge benefit mm-hmm. for people because we've done it this way versus this way. Let's make sure we do it this first way that's really effective because we're seeing that in the lives of the people we work with. Mm-hmm. And being able to kind of stay with them beyond just the time frame of the program, right? And so understanding, you know, if you're a high school, right? What happens to your students after high school, right? Not just helping them get that diploma, not just helping them get their FAFSA and financial aid, not just helping them get in there, but what's really happened to them? Are they getting and completing post-secondary education, or are they just starting post-secondary education? What kind of jobs are they getting? And understanding, you know, are there certain jobs that students who receive certain, you know, courses or work with certain teachers or have certain supports in high school that are leading to more transformative career paths? Those are the things that if you think about it beyond just the narrow, what am I helping mm-hmm. them with? But again, that broader, more comprehensive view, that's where we see that real big transformation can happen in people's mm-hmm. lives.
So how are these larger principles disseminated? For example, if you look at early childhood education and there are certain things that are more likely to lead to positive outcomes, and I'm a person considering starting something new, is there a way that I could know that information up front so that as I'm even creating this nonprofit, I can start out emphasizing those particular principles as opposed to just kind of doing it willy-nilly and then having to retrofit it?
So the reality that we've found is that there's not great resources for that. Yeah. If there were, you wouldn't need some of what Slingshot's trying to fill in terms of a void. And so the way that we share that right now to try and make it available to community is we make all of the reports, we call them an impact study report, available on our website.
Got it.
So if you're interested in after-school programming, we work with several organizations that do after-school program, you can go look at their reports and understand what are some of the practices that they're doing that are we've been able to validate as being really effective. And so that's kind of where we are right now. The goal that we have, though, is we're now working with enough organizations. We're a little over 55 right now, that we're able to start stepping back and saying, well, hey, we're working with four or five organizations that are helping people reenter from the justice system. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things across those organizations? We kind of call those domain insights. Uh-huh. And we're trying to start making those available on our website. But then we want to put together over the next couple of years kind of playbooks that will be able to say, okay, if you're interested in helping in this area, here's the practices that work really well. Here's kind of the organizations in the community that are already really effective at that. Mm-hmm. We're examples of organizations that are doing some of those practices. And here's kind of some things to be mindful of as you think about either trying to make what you're doing better or trying to start something in that space. And that's actually MemWorks, this workforce project, is very much kind of our first time of doing that at scale for an area, in this case, workforce development.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great segue. Do you want to say a little bit about sort of MemWorks and the genesis of this collaboration?
Yeah. So MemWorks is intended to kind of answer one primary question. Why are employment pathways not working for people experiencing poverty in Memphis?
Okay.
We have a quarter of the city of Memphis that's living below the poverty threshold. And yet every employer I talk to complains about not being able to hire and retain the workforce that they want. You would think those two things would take care of each other. Mm-hmm. People would benefit from jobs. People have jobs. That should work. But something is not working in those pathways. And as we've talked with people in the community, nobody could really explain why. Mm. You know, they would know that, or they could share a few examples or a few hypotheses, but nobody's like, we don't know why. We don't have the evidence or data that can kind of answer that question. And so MemWorks has been focused on, specifically for the population experiencing poverty, what are those root causes that are impeding those employment pathways so that as a community we can know what they are, mm-hmm. so therefore we're empowered to do something about them. And then the second part of MemWorks then is to say, okay, if these are these primary roadblocks, what's proven to be effective at overcoming them? Mm-hmm. So that not only do we say, here's the challenges, but also here's ways we can overcome that as a community so we're empowered to do something about, one, solving the right problems, and two, doing them in the most effective way. And so it's been a neat way for us to take kind of our work that we traditionally do with individual nonprofits and aggregate it to think about an entire sector of poverty fighting, which is workforce development.
Wow. And I know, you know, with Blue Oval and lots of different ancillary employment opportunities that'll be coming with that, you do hope that it will sort of help everybody's boat get lifted a little bit higher as opposed to just like a few people.
My fear is that in situations like this in the past, there's not an intentional way to overcome these roadblocks.
Yeah.
What happens is that these huge opportunities come, like we have here in Memphis, right?
Right.
We've got a huge St. Jude expansion.
Yes.
We've got Blue Oval City. We have all of the ancillary businesses that are coming with Blue Oval City. And if we don't fix these pathways, what inevitably happens is that those employers will hire people from outside Memphis to come here and take those jobs. And in 5 or 10 years, when all those jobs are filled, we'll look and say, we still have the same number of people experiencing poverty because we didn't find a way to fix those pathways and enable those opportunities to be available to people who are often in the most disadvantaged situation. And honestly, too, sometimes the hardest to help.
Yes.
Right? It's easier to help someone who, you know, already has a high school diploma, may have some college, right? You know, they're kind of right on the cusp of being able to get those jobs. That's the easy way to do it because they're so close. But how do you help someone who might only have a sixth grade reading level today, right, and be out of high school? How do you help that population get to a spot where they can also benefit from this economic growth and not be stuck in jobs that don't have any kind of career trajectory? And so that's the whole impetus for why now is we've got this unique opportunity in Memphis. We've got this, you know, these jobs here. We have a lot of funding that's come in to help with workforce. So we have a $25 million grant that was given to the University of Memphis from the TANF, state TANF funds to kind of study that. We've got this EDA federal grant, the Good Jobs Grant, about $21 million for that, that's here to also help with this as well as other things. More for Memphis is another one that's this, you know, big community-based effort trying to help improve economic mobility. And we've got all these things going on. And our thing is, well, how do we make sure that these efforts are going to be as, and this funding and resources are going to be as effective as possible? And so the nice thing about our work is it's not anything that we're kind of hiding to ourselves. We're making it as available as possible because we want everyone to use it, not because we care about it being from Slingshot, because we're confident that it's going to help. Mm-hmm. And if we can get that in the hands of decision makers, if we can get that in the hands of people who are also caring about addressing these workforce opportunities, then we're all going to be better off and create better pathways to economic mobility for mm-hmm. all of Memphis instead of those that might already be in a more advantaged situation.
Wow. So I imagine when you were at McKinsey, you were not focused on poverty reducing initiatives. And I wonder what took you from sort of what sounds like a more traditional kind of corporate consulting, management consulting and analysis employment to something that is focused more on people who are really struggling?
Yeah, I mean, the simplest way is God took me there.
Yeah.
Because there was no plan, there was no path that I had kind of mapped out to do that. I think of, you know, my faith had instilled in me this desire to be of service, right, and mm-hmm. to help. And I've been the recipient of a lot of support and help in my life. You know, the way I got into consulting was through others, you know, alumni from my mm-hmm. school taking me under their wing and saying, hey, Jared, this is what consulting is.
Yeah.
This is what a case interview is and all these goofy things that you have to do to kind of get into the consulting space. And so I was a recipient of that. My church helped me at periods mm-hmm. of time when my dad was going through unemployment growing up in my childhood. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen how, like, just that caring for others, right? You know, treat others the way you want to be treated. Love thy neighbor. You know, I take those two great commandments, love God and love thy neighbor as mm-hmm. thyself, very dear to me. That was a part of it. And so I had an opportunity when I was at my consulting firm to do some work in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And the genesis behind that was to say, you know, can I use business to create positive social impact in developing countries, places where there's less opportunity for people and there's more opportunity from a business mindset to do things that aren't being done in those countries. And mm-hmm. so I did get a chance to do a kind of 25-year healthcare strategy while I was there that focused on trying to take high-quality healthcare down to a lower socioeconomic population. Mm-hmm. But then I also did traditional business there,
right,
too. And so that was kind of the starting point. And then ultimately, I reached a point in my career where I was unsatisfied. I would go to work. I'd work hard. I achieved. And I still didn't feel it was never enough. It was just, you know, I could achieve and achieve and achieve, and it was never enough. And had some experiences that forced me through health and other situations mm-hmm. to kind of step back, take a break. And I credit God for forcing mm-hmm. that in my life so that I had time to reflect on what really inspired me, what really gave mm-hmm. me fulfillment. And I thought maybe that was through teaching, so I tried that mm-hmm. a little bit and had an opportunity to teach at Rhodes College for a year. But ultimately, through what seems at the time happen chance, which
right.
looking back in hindsight
right.
is very clear divine intervention, the consulting firm I was at connected me through a network to Slingshot.
Mm.
And so one of the senior partners in my consulting firm was one of the founding board members of Slingshot. And just through the friends of a friend's kind of a thing, I learned about Slingshot. I'm like, this is pretty neat. You know, I had always been hesitant about the nonprofit space because, you know, I have a minor in statistics. I majored in accounting. I do numbers and I like to be able to measure things. And I'm like, well, how do I know if this nonprofit work is making a difference? And especially mm-hmm. when I was in Africa, I'd see things come where people would be like, they'd come and build a school. And that's great. But then they'd leave and there weren't any teachers for the school.
Right.
There weren't any textbooks. You know, there was all these things that would still not see the impact that could have. And I'm like, well, how do I try and do that? And I learned about Slingshot. I'm like, well, this is exactly the thing that I had struggled with when it came to how do we be philanthropic and how do we give our time best. I'm like, Slingshot's helping others understand that. And it gets to use the skill sets that I've built through my career, but in a way to help people's lives instead of helping big businesses make
right.
more money, which is what consultants do.
Right.
And so it was this unplanned completely unexpected way that now has kind of connected all these dots in my life in a way that my faith, my skill sets, the things that bring me the greatest fulfillment and joy are all now kind of in one place. And it's the first time in my career that I am not thinking about what's next. I love what I get to do. And I'm satisfied with this. And, you know, I'm not famous. I'll never be rich. I'm at a nonprofit. And I'm so comfortable with that because I have so much fulfillment from what I'm doing in a way that I just never had in the more kind of prestigious or traditional careers that I might have been in the past.
So it sounds like you're very present in the moment.
It's awesome. And the people you get to work with are amazing, both the nonprofits we work with, but also at our nonprofit at Slingshot. It's rewarding for me because I get to work with people who care and are smart, but are also inspiring. I think sometimes in the business world, when kind of bottom line, which is making money, becomes too much of a priority, people will do things that aren't always the most inspirational, or sometimes you'll make sacrifices that aren't as good for people, but might be good for the bottom line, or it's just a business. You know, you hear all those statements, especially in sports, right? Oh, I got traded. Well, it's a business and all this. But it's not. We're humans, right? And so I'm in a spot now where I get to appreciate and value people as people first, and then a professional, right? Or then, you know, doing that. And that's just, that is something that just resonates with me and feels, based on how I view my faith, more of how God views us too, right? God doesn't worry if I'm a CEO of a Fortune 500 company or, you know, I'm a secretary at a nonprofit. God cares about, am I doing all I can to fulfill his will for me? You know, and he loves me regardless, right? You know, of what job I have or what I do. And so it's just neat to be in a spot where I get to be with people and really value who they are and the uniqueness that they bring to trying to just help people and fulfill kind of this Christ-like mission, I guess, right, of caring for our neighbor.
Wow. So, Jared, if for our listening audience who may be hearing about Slingshot for the first time, are there ways for persons to get involved if they also are excited about this sort of work? I mean, you don't actually provide services yourself, so it's probably, there probably aren't a lot of volunteer opportunities, but how might people learn more or get more involved?
Yeah, so our work is only effective as people use it.
Got it.
Otherwise, it's just a great intellectual effort, but if the nonprofits don't use it, if the community doesn't use it, it doesn't have a benefit for people. And so our first kind of way of getting involved is use our work. And so we invite people to go to our website. If you go to slingshotmemphis.org, there's a section on poverty alleviation insights. And within that, we share reports about the 57 nonprofits we work with.
Okay.
And you can learn about those nonprofits. You can understand their effectiveness. On each of those reports, we identify opportunities that would help those nonprofits become more effective. And so you can use that to say, well, hey, I want to support these nonprofits my financial resources, or I have talents and something that would help that nonprofit. Maybe I can reach out and volunteer to help them with an opportunity that we've been able to substantiate would help them be more effective. So that's one approach.
Okay.
The second thing is we provide a fund. We call it the Accelerate Impact Fund. And every year we go out and raise money in the community, and anybody can invest their philanthropy through this fund. And what's unique is that we give 100% of those funds at the end of every year to the nonprofits we study. We don't take any fees for that for ourselves because our costs are already covered separately. And so it's 100% to those organizations, but we invest it based on their effectiveness. So the most effective organizations get more of those funds. The less effective get less. And those that improve, we also will invest more in those organizations because this whole work that we do is about getting better and, you know, continually improving. And so it gives people a way to know that their philanthropy is making a difference because we've done the research, we've studied the organizations, and we're ensuring that people who contribute to the Accelerate Impact Fund, their money is going to make a difference with organizations that are effective at fighting poverty and their sphere of poverty fighting. So those are kind of the two biggest ways people can be involved. The last thing is that we're going to be having some events here early next year. So we're having a new event. It'll be late February around celebrating the money that the community raised for our Accelerate Impact Fund, but also highlighting the most effective organizations that we've studied for 2023. And so it's a way for us to kind of share a message of hope with the community that, hey, there are some really effective organizations at fighting poverty here, and we want to profile those organizations so people can know about them and support them and help try and replicate what those organizations are doing and their work that they're doing. And so it'll be a way for the community to come and learn about those organizations and be able to kind of understand what's being effective out there, so that instead of all these stories of, you know, what's wrong with Memphis, we can emphasize, well, there's some great things going on in Memphis to try and address some of our challenges, and we should be supportive of that and celebrate that. And so that will be an event, again, that we'll have here at the end of February.
And I'm assuming that people can find out more about that on the website once those details are made public.
Yep.
Wow. Well, Jared, it's been so wonderful to get to know a little bit about you today and also about Slingshot and this really amazing ministry that you're engaged in. Your commitment and passion for it is so apparent. So thank you so much for being on the show, and many blessings as your work continues.
Thank you so much. I'm very, very grateful.
Support for WYXR comes from Grind City Festival, a two-day music and arts festival featuring Whiskey Myers, Charlie Crockett, Muscadine Bloodline, Nikki Lane, The Red Clay Strays, and more, taking place April 5th and 6th at Grind City Brewing Company in Uptown Memphis. Tickets available at grindcityfest.com. Sheet Cake is proud to support WYXR, a contemporary art gallery focused on artists with a connection to the South. Sheet Cake opens December 1st at 405 Monroe Avenue in the Edge District. More information on featured artists at sheetcakegallery.com.
Barware is proud to support WYXR. Located on Front Street in downtown Memphis, Barware serves fresh and seasonally inspired menus every Tuesday through Saturday evening at 5 p.m. More information at barwarememphis.com.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Faithfully Memphis. Just a reminder, you can hear us anywhere that you get podcasts, including Apple Music and Spotify. So we encourage you to not only listen, but to subscribe and like and give us any comments or feedback about other topics you would like us to cover. And for those of you who are in the Memphis area, this Saturday, which will be December the 9th, we are having the third annual Advent Arts Market at Barth House, which is our college ministry located on the campus of the University of Memphis at 409 Patterson Avenue. And if you are still, like me, needing to do some holiday shopping, if sort of the season has crept up on you, we will have student artists, other sorts of artists and vendors selling handmade products along with food and live music, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So please join us on Saturday for shopping and fellowship. And so until next Thursday, stay safe and stay positive.